So glad you're along here on the Ideas Net. Larry Mueller here. We're going to switch gears with you now a little bit and talk with you about world hunger. And there's a great program that's going on here in Wisconsin, actually across the country, that churches and other organizations are sponsoring to help in this whole process. And we'll learn about that, and we'll talk about the world hunger itself and what you and I can do about it as we visit with our two guests. Ken Shapiro, Associate Dean in the College of Agricultural and Life Sciences. He's in charge of international programs for the college and is also an agricultural economist, and he teaches a very popular course on world food hunger. I know it's very popular because a lot of my own students, advisees, have a hard time getting into it because it fills so fast. Dean Ken Shapiro, welcome to the program. Thanks for being with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks, Larry. Glad to be here.
And also with us today, Margaret Bogue. Margaret is a professor emerita in history at the UW-Madison. Had her on many times over the years to talk about a variety of things, but this is a new thing that we're talking with her about today. She's a member of the First Congregational Church of Christ, this congregation, and the Zwingli United Church of Christ at Paoli are combining resources to produce a crop of soybeans. Well, what are they going to do with that? Well, we'll find out, but it has some international implications as we visit with her as well. And you can join in, too, with your own comments or questions as we talk with them about the program that Margaret's working on or about world food hunger in general. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in the Madison area at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Margaret, welcome back. Nice to have you with us.
Well, thank you. It's very good of you to have me back again.
Well, it really is nice to have you here. And before we talk with you, I want to talk with Ken Shapiro just a little bit to sort of set the stage for us here. Ken, do we have an idea of the stat? I mean, how many people go to bed hungry and in this world?
The United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization issues an annual estimate, and the latest numbers are something like 850 million people are undernourished in this world. And the biggest tragedy, of course, is amongst the children, where in developing countries, it seems that perhaps 35 or 40% of the children in developing countries are undernourished. And undernourishment for children can mean stunting. And when children are stunted, that's not just physically, but mentally. Mm-hmm. So these children, those who do survive the malnourishment in their early years, wind up with much limited cognitive and physical abilities. And so the cycle of malnourishment continues as they become adults and are less able to earn a living and grow food for their families.
We, the United States, is a large, maybe the world's largest food aid donor, and I guess that's one of the ways that the world tries to resolve the problem or at least help out. Talk about that a little bit.
Indeed, the United States provides about one half of all food aid that's delivered to hungry people around the world. But food aid is a relatively small portion of the total assistance that is given to poor countries. Right now, it's looking at about 2% of all international aid, United States and other, comes from food aid. And that food aid, as some of you might have seen in the recent New York Times article, has come under some criticism. As well-intentioned as many of us are in promoting food aid, we see that the way that we provide food aid is really quite inefficient in that we are paying premiums for purchase of the food by a relatively few agribusiness companies and then shipping in U.S. flag carriers, so that by the time that food gets to the poor country, about 5 months later, after the appeal for food is heard, that food winds up costing something like 40% more than market price of food in those countries. So in some, it's a very inefficient way of providing food aid. And the current administration, President Bush, has been promoting an alternative, which is to take the money and rather than use it to buy food here, buy food in a neighboring region, a neighboring country, that will allow us to get the food to the hungry people much more quickly and at a much lower cost. And I can see the question rising in your eyes, Larry. Well, isn't food aid supposed to help the American farmer by buying up that food and supporting prices? And indeed, food aid is such a small percentage of the total food production that it has no significant impact. And studies have been done to try to find if there is an impact. And American farmers do not benefit. There's no evidence that there's a benefit, an increase in farm gate prices by the purchase of food aid. The beneficiaries are those very few agribusiness companies and shipping companies that purchase, process, and ship that food.
So that sounds like a pretty good idea that the president has then to, not without its problems, I'm sure, but...
Well, it's been criticized by those beneficiaries, as you might imagine, that they might lose some of their share. But it's also been criticized because they say, well, if you were to take that money into a poor country, well, what about corruption and will the money be diverted? And, of course, the same might be said of the food that winds up in those countries. So there are critics as well as advocates.
Well, there are other ways that people are trying to help in this whole situation, world food hunger situation. And Margaret Bogue is part of a group that's working on that, Margaret. And tell us what your church is doing.
Okay. We're working with the Foods Resource Bank, which is an organization, a humanitarian Christian organization, that is interested in assisting with this problem of world hunger, but they're going at it in a different way. They're going at it in an interesting way, pairing rural churches and city churches in the United States. The rural churches supply land and the equipment and the care that it takes to get a crop in the ground, get it out, get it to market. The city church supplies necessary monies to fertilizer, seed, all of that kind of thing, whatever is needed to make it work. So they go together and they form a city church and a country church combo, and they raise the crop, and the crop goes to market where it is sold, and the proceeds from that go to the Foods Resource Bank, which in turn takes that money and anything along with it, which the two congregations have contributed, quite aside from raising the crop. And they send it to a specific location where they've developed a program. Now, in last year, they had 49 programs scattered around the world in all the continents. And once the money gets over there and it stays in the hands of people associated with Foods Resource Bank, it doesn't get mixed up with the government or anything like that. Once the money gets there, then it's used to engage in what you would call a production-oriented way of assisting with food hunger. And that is to help people, particularly small farmers in very, very poor countries, such as Cambodia, to improve the way in which they are raising their rice, in this case, improve the way they're cultivating rice in the rice paddies, and to help them also to do a better job in their vegetable gardens, and as well to help them rear fish. The main elements of the Cambodian diet are rice, vegetables, and fish. So the instruction is part of it once you're there. Once our representative is there. If you have to buy seed or a little bit of equipment or something or other, the money is used for that. Classes are held, and the local farmers learn how to use improved methods which will yield greater amounts of food for them from their own land. And then having learned that, those people then teach their fellow farmers. So it isn't always somebody coming in and telling and then hanging around and sort of supervising things. It's a case of they learn it and then they use it. and they enhance the crops. And the evidence so far is in Cambodia, for example, that the methods of rice production that have been advocated have increased rice production, that mulching has helped with the vegetable gardens. The wells are absolutely essential, and some of that money that goes over there helps to make very, very fine wells for them to have a good source of water, things like that.
So,
go ahead.
Well, I'm just going to say there are lots of things there to talk about, and we'll continue that conversation. I know we have Randy and Colfax on, who is also involved, has a church involved in this as well.
Oh, it's wonderful.
So we'll hear from him as well. We need to take a quick look at the news and weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Net, and then we'll be back with our two guests, Ken Shapiro and Margaret Bogue. Stay with us. We will be right back. Talking about world hunger today with Ken Shapiro, Associate Dean in the College of Agricultural and Life Sciences, who is in charge of international programs for the college. He also teaches a course on world hunger as well, an agricultural economist. And with Margaret Bogue, a professor emerita in history at UW-Madison, a member of the First Congregational Church of Christ in Madison, and the congregation in Madison, and the congregation with the Zwingli United Church of Christ at Paoli, are combining resources to produce a crop of soybeans. And as Margaret was telling us earlier, after the harvest is sold, the funds go to the Cambodian farmers to assist them in improving their rice production, how to make use of compost in their gardens, and maintaining new wells is another area that she talked about. You may be involved in a program like this. We'd love to hear from you. Or if you have some questions as we talk about world hunger and why we have it and what can be done about it, certainly join in at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or in the Madison area at 263-1890, 263-1890. And Randy in Colfax has been waiting quite a while, so let's put Randy on the air. Randy, hi. Thank you for waiting.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Professor Margaret. Our church is also doing a foods resource bank farming project. We're in our third year. And we're in Colfax Rural Lutheran, up in Colfax, Wisconsin. And starting this year, our Savior's Lutheran in Wheeler, which is just 7 miles away, they're having their first food resource bank project this year. It's really taking off. And what we found is that the rural churches are often looking for a way to help, but we don't have the big resources that larger urban churches do. We can really help out just by our knowledge and our equipment.
Mm-hmm.
What a Foods Resource Bank does is it gives hope to those farmers in Africa or Cambodia. It doesn't just give them a handout and say, here's the food. It helps them grow it, and it helps them get some hope.
And you, which country are you working with, by the way, Randy?
Last year, we did a project in the northern Katanga, which is in Congo in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And we sent over $5,000 to Foods Resource Bank to help with that project. And it was just amazing what people would turn out to do to help out with this.
Well, it sounds like a great program. And, Margaret, this is your first year, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. This is our first year.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I wanted to make sure that people out there in Wisconsin knew that there's resources available and how to contact Foods Resource Bank.
Yes.
You can go to their website, which is foodsresourcebank.com.
Mm-hmm.
And also Colfax Rural Lutheran Parish also has a website, which is ruralroute2.com/FRB. And both websites have contact information to get in touch with us or with Foods Resource Bank directly.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. And, Ken, what about efforts like this? $5,000 is could be quite a bit of money. It could go quite a long ways to helping in an area of the country.
Indeed, Larry. And, you know, one might be sitting there and saying, well, Shapiro said 850 million people are hungry. How much is that little bit of money going to help? But there's this there's the story that some of you may have heard about a little boy who was on a beach. There had been a big storm, and that storm tossed thousands of starfish up onto the shore. And the sun came out, and it was going to bake those starfish, and they were going to die. So that little boy started tossing the starfish back in. And an older man came along and said, you'll never make a difference. There are too many of them. The boy picked up a starfish, tossed it in, said, made a difference for that one. So I encourage you to not think that you have to be on a big scale. Small helps that farmer, helps that village.
Yeah. And Margaret, what do you hope to you have any idea what you're going to raise? How many acres of soybeans are you planting, by the way?
I don't really know the acreage. I would love to be able to say, but I don't. And we don't want to estimate more than we can do.
Sure.
But I would think that we might conceivably, under the best of all possible conditions, come up with a couple of $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that may be an underestimate, but we'd rather set it low than to set it higher. And we know from what we've learned about the amounts of money spent in these various projects that even $1,000 goes a long way.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Randy, for calling. Appreciate it. Greg in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Thank you for calling. Hello.
Yeah, I have a lot of things to say. First of all, I believe world hunger, it's an inescapable thing, especially with the greenhouse effect, especially with the fact that we're burning automobiles and we're sucking oxygen up. Hemoglobin rusts. That's how we respirate. We weren't designed, the ecology, the environment, isn't designed for automobiles. As we steal oxygen from the surface of the Earth, we're decreasing. When Ford invented the automobile, the oxygen concentration was 22%. Now it's 18%. It's going down so that the big insects, the trachea, can't absorb oxygen. They're dying. Food sources for our fish and our wildlife, they're just disappearing. Birds, the purple martins. I used to have 16 pairs of purple martins in my birdhouse. In 1983, they disappeared. Hmm. I used to pick monarchs up and fill jars with monarchs laying down flat because they were drunk on alfalfa sap or the juice. And I'd pick them up and I'd put them down and I'd get them in the jar and then I'd let them all out and they'd fly out like a volcano and I'd fill them with stuff.
Well, Ken Shapiro, our guest, our caller, Greg, is raising an issue here of, you know, we've got climate problems. You want to comment?
Yeah, the recent studies by the Intergovernmental Committee on Climate Change, that the United Nations body, has come out and quite clearly shown that it is human impact that is leading to global warming. And perhaps more troubling, they have projected that the biggest impacts are going to be in the warm areas where the poor countries are, so that it's us folks in the temperate areas who are doing the damage, but the harm is going to be felt disproportionately amongst those poorer populations. We can wring our hands about that, or we can do what Margaret and her church groups are doing, and that is try to make a difference. And I guess I'm optimistic, but I think that we will make a difference.
Yeah, you hope. Thank you, Greg.
I do, too.
Yeah. Thank you for calling, Greg. Lois in Middleton, it's your turn. Hi, Lois.
Hi.
Thanks for calling. Yeah, go ahead.
I'd like to talk about what Bread for the World does. It's a Christian lobby group that lobbies Congress to help end food hunger in the United States and the world. And they get churches to sponsor people writing letters to Congress, and they take a particular point each year. This year, they are asking Congress to totally revise the Farm Bill. A lot of the money for commodity support go to the big farmers, and the little farmers are not getting it, and that's producing more rural hunger in the United States. It's also, it touches world hunger because our big farmers take our commodities to other countries and undersell them, sell them for less than cost. And because of that, the farmers in those poor countries cannot compete, and they end up going into the city because they can't end up producing their own goods and being able to sell them.
Well, Ken, Shapiro, comment from you?
I think your caller is on target on some of her issues, especially the latter one in which she talks about American crops going into markets in poor countries and having that crop be available at less than production cost. And the prime example is cotton. Mm. And the West African countries, where some of the poorest people in the world live, have been suffering very badly because our cotton comes on the market at such low prices.
And what about Bread for the World as an organization?
I think it's terrific. It mobilizes that private support, and that's for affecting legislation. But in doing so, I think it also has an impact on individuals who want to make their own donations. And I wanted to come back to that point that was raised earlier, that the private donations that this country gives for helping poor people around the world are approximately three times what the government offers. So that each of those donations, $1,000, $2,000, they add up to a very large amount that's very important, as I say, more than the official United States government donations to poor countries.
Mm. Thank you again, Lois, for calling. Appreciate it. If you'd like to join in, we're talking about some neat programs that are going on to help with the world hunger situation. And Margaret Brogue is part of one with her First Congregational Church in Madison and the Zwingli United Church of Christ in Paola getting together to combine resources to produce a crop of soybeans, raise some money to help farmers in Cambodia. And we heard earlier from another caller whose church, Lutheran Church, is doing the same thing. He mentioned another group doing the same thing. If you have some questions about that, or maybe you're involved in one yourself, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call. Ken, I know you had a book that you wanted to recommend as well.
Right. The best that I have seen on the question of food aid is a book by Chris Barrett and Dan Maxwell, and it's called Food Aid After 50 Years. It came out in 2005. The publisher is Routledge. And I'm especially happy about this book because both Chris and Dan are PhD graduates from our Department of Agricultural and Applied Economics. So this will give you the history and will provide a very clear and detailed discussion of who wins and who loses, the inefficiencies in food aid, and importantly, recommendations for making food aid a lot more efficient and a lot more beneficial to the ultimate recipients.
And I know you also wanted to talk about a website. And
yes, another example of what individuals can do in a small way that can be very important to those recipients. And that's our own students here at UW-Madison who have formed a nonprofit group that helps improve the water supplies for primarily drinking water in villages in Uganda. And the website for that is www.villagehealthproject, all spelled out, no spaces, .org. This is a group of students who have participated in our college's study abroad program in Uganda, came back and said, we've got to do something to help. And now they pass this along year by year. So students are raising money from Rotary and other sources and helping to build rain harvesting tanks and biosand filters that go into households. And the key here is that this drastically decreases diarrhea among children. And diarrheal diseases are a major cause of morbidity and mortality. If you can't keep it in, it doesn't matter what you're eating. So it's a major cause of malnutrition.
And that's a wonderful program. And I want to just take a look. Go to this website, villagehealthproject.org, and find out what some of our outstanding students in Wisconsin are doing to to help this situation. This one has to do with water, but it's a very important project, and it kind of it's also, just as a little aside, it's also one of the great reasons for getting students involved in international programs and studying abroad and working abroad and so forth, because I think it really is a broadening experience. So if you have some children at home that are going on to college, I sure hope you, or who are in college, I sure hope you will encourage them to take a look at the various opportunities that are available. Janet in Boulder Junction, and you know, Margaret, we'll get to you in a minute too, because I know you've got a book too that you want to recommend, but let's go to Janet in Boulder Junction next. Janet, hi.
Hi. Has anyone reported on the work that the Lutheran World Relief has done through many, many countries with their coffee project, where they get the coffee growers together who don't make much of a profit because the in-between men make so much, but they have them organized and able to sell their own project? And, of course, and they do the same thing with handicraft, provide them with materials, provide them with markets. And up here in Boulder Junction, we do quilting, and we send, and Lutheran World Relief sends thousands and thousands of quilts to wherever they are needed, wherever there is hunger or tsunamis and hurricanes. And it's just, they do so, so much worldwide to relieve not only the hunger, providing the people with what they need to produce their food, and besides sending food. And they receive a lot more information if you would go to LutheranRuralRelief.org.
LutheranRuralRelief.org.
Yes.
Thank you very much for calling. Ken, his comment on Lutheran Rural Relief?
I'm not familiar with those programs, but we do read about the coffee fair trade programs, and from what I've read, it seems that those do in fact increase the incomes to those farmers who sign up and agree to produce their coffee under certain conditions and decrease the costs of the middlemen.
Thank you very much, Janet. Appreciate it. And Diane in Chippewa Falls, we will go to you next. Hi, Diane.
Hi. I'm actually driving home from Minneapolis right now, and I just picked up 25 grinders that will be put on a cargo container tomorrow to go to Malawi, Africa. What these grinders will do is allow families or groups to grind corn, or what we think they'll be used for primarily is to make peanut butter, to grind the groundnuts. So it will add extra nutrition for families or provide them as a with a source of income generation when they sell their product. But this project is one that the 210 congregations of the Northwest Synod of Wisconsin, part of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, is doing with our companions in Malawi, Africa. And they certainly have been impacted by changing weather patterns, the global warming. And this year, though, they do have a window of opportunity to address hunger issues because they will have a good harvest this year. The government had a good fertilizer program, and they had good rains. Our Synod Assembly offering in June will collect money for food security-type projects. And that's what they're looking for, is not the handout, but the leg up.
Yeah. Diane, thanks so much for calling. Can a comment from you, and then we'll ask Margaret.
I think it's terrific, and I'd say let's call this the Starfish Hour. If everybody out there would save a starfish, this would be a better world. I think that's a terrific program.
Yes, it is wonderful to hear from all these people and the wonderful projects they're engaged in to try to help the hunger problem and the larger problems that people, health and all the rest, they're suffering from.
And with your church, you're focusing on Cambodia, and I know you had a book that you wanted to recommend as well.
Yes. When we got into this Cambodia project, and everybody was very enthusiastic about it, it might be interesting for the listeners to know that the two churches, the boards that were working on this particular project, met several times, and we all agreed that we wanted to do something with water, mm-hmm. and we searched this long, long list of possibilities that that the Foods Resource Bank had sent to us, and we came down on Cambodia, and we thought that was a good one because it was underfunded and obviously very much in need. I decided, I don't know Cambodia. I'm going to find out. And it might be interesting to those who are listening to know of a very fine short history of Cambodia called Cambodia from Empire to Survival by John Tully, T-U-L-L-Y, which certainly underscores the problems that these people are having today. It traces the history of these people who are working on the land to make a living over the centuries. And essentially, it's always been an agricultural country. And essentially, the kinds of things that are being done today are the same kinds of things that were being done centuries ago. And they depend on that to make a living. So that's why I suggest this book. I think it really puts the whole thing in a marvelous chronological perspective that goes back for centuries.
Well, now your church met with the as you said, your leaders in the United First Congregational Church of Christ met with the Zwingli United Church of Christ at Paoli many times and came up with a plan. And I assume the Foods Resource Bank is also a bank of knowledge for organizations and for churches like yours to sort of help in this process. Is that
exactly? The Foods Resource Bank supplies all kinds of information about what they are trying to do, how they are trying to do it, what the possibilities are for projects to contribute to around the world, and is very, very helpful in getting things started in any particular situation where two congregations come together and want to do this.
Well, it's great to hear from you, and also great to hear from so many people who called in with the variety of programs that are going on around the state. Gives you a good feeling, Ken. More to be done, though.
Absolutely. The history of malnutrition is not a happy one. We see the percentage of the malnourished, the hungry, going down, but the numbers, in fact, are going up. And I think it's efforts like we've been hearing about today that might turn that trend around. But so far, while we might see press releases saying the percent of hungry in the world, in the developing world, is 17%, it used to be 25%, but you look at the numbers, and those numbers are the people, and those numbers are going up.
And I want to, again, it's the Foods Resource Bank.
Right.
That's the you can just go online to a search engine, and I think it's Foods Resource Bank. Is it .org or is it .com? I can't remember.
If you just go onto Yahoo and write in Foods Resource Bank, a great font of information
comes
will unfold.
Flying out of there. And I also wanted to mention, again, the Village Health Project.org, villagehealthproject.org, that University of Wisconsin students are involved with. The Lutheran Church, obviously, as well, has been involved in a number of programs. And I encourage you to take a look at your own situation in your own community. If there's something that you can do with your church or other organization, why, think about that. Go to that Foods Resource Bank or some of these other websites and see if you can help out. Ken Shapiro, Margaret Bogue, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having us.
And stay with us. Lots in store.